Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford, and this week I'm delighted to say I am joined by Malachy Clark of the Irish Times, Eamon Fitzmaurice, and Rory O'Neill as always. How are we all doing, gents?
Good,
we're
Mikey.
Good, Rory.
Hi, Mikey.
That's okay. Well, Rory's here too. You can, you know, sure, he wants to know how you're doing as well.
We are all good.
We're all good. Listen, there's 12 teams left in the All Ireland Football Championship, and after this weekend, there will be seven. The Connacht County, the Connacht Provincial Championship is about to be run off in 3 weeks rather than its normal, I think, seven. Mickey Hart, after 18 years, is facing something of a leadership challenge in Tyrone. And Ronan McCarthy is possibly the first inter-county manager of all time who has to ask another team for permission to play a player. This is, you know, 2020 is just the year that keeps on giving. It's quite fascinating. Malachy, I'll go to you first as our resident Ulsterman, nearest to the story.
Living in Glasnevin, nearest I am.
No, you're probably, no, Rory's slightly further north than you. You're still closer to your neighbours anyway. Mickey Hart, this is, every year this is kind of talked about and doesn't happen, and then probably just because of the nature of the championship and how everything's rushed and there's no real oxygen for conversations between games, nobody had really considered this until news started seeping out last night, really, had they?
Well, I don't know if nobody had considered it. I mean, like, as you said, you know, every year it's, you know, Mickey has gone in about, let's say, the last 4 or 5 years into, what do we call it, the Wenger zone, the point at which, you know, people kind of go, okay, your achievements are unprecedented, you deserve to call your own way out. Up until a certain point. I don't know exactly, you know, how real this is. The story seems to be that he has asked for another year and has not been given it, but I don't know that he has not been definitively not given it. Like, I don't know that he has been ushered out the door just yet. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think the thing with him was always, I don't know if anybody who played under him was ever going to push him out the door. Mm. So I guess it depends on the stomach of whoever wants to come in there. If it's one of his former players, I think it was always thought that none of them would make him leave, or would none of them would take over if he had to leave in sort of argumentative circumstances. But it'd be fascinating to see how it works out there over the next couple of weeks. He's the greatest Tyrone manager of all time.
Nobody wants to be Brutus in this situation.
No, and the thing with it is just given the nature of, how to put this delicately, the nature of things in Tyrone in general, it is unlikely that the end, when it comes, will be agreed by all sides, because they tend to argue over things up there.
We could have a press conference outside Four Seasons Landscaping. Yeah. Eamon, you obviously faced off against him on several occasions. By the time you were a manager, obviously his reputation by far preceded him, but the impact he's had on the game, whether he goes now or stays for another 3-year term, it's beyond question, really, isn't it?
Oh, it's massive, and I think that's probably part of his problem, to be honest, Mikey, that he's measured by such high standards because of the achievements he's had himself, particularly early in his reign and up to, you know, obviously up to 2008 when they won the last All-Ireland. I think looking at Tyrone, there's always a feeling that they're very close to suddenly having a very good team again, and you know, that they're not far away from it. And I think with the whole conversation for Mickey and for the county board, it's about what's best for Tyrone football. And it's only them that can decide that. And they certainly don't need another ex-Kerry player advising them what they should and shouldn't be doing. But I think that's the bottom line, that as a manager, you're always trying to think what's best for the team, what's best for the county, and whether that involves Mickey being involved for another year or two, or whether it's time for fresh voice and fresh approach. It's only them that can decide that. But as Maliki said, it wouldn't be surprising if things were, you know, if there were arguments about what's the best way forward between now and the end of the year. But they'll have to get their house in order fairly fast, because the planning for next season, I imagine for any team that's out, is probably starting pretty soon anyway.
Yeah. You yourself did 6 years, I think, with Kerry, which by modern standards is a long stint. So it's kind of hard to imagine another manager having a length of a period of tenure that long. And I guess just from your own perspective, how difficult is it to go back to the well every year and kind of keep things fresh and feel like the players are still listening to you? It must be challenging.
It is. And it's probably the biggest challenge. I think there's a couple of parts that I think for yourself, you have to have the energy and appetite for it, because it's a huge, you know, job that involves a lot of energy, and if you don't have it, you're being disingenuous to the group, and you shouldn't be there. It's as simple as that. The other side of it then, as you mentioned, is the freshness approach. I think every couple of years there certainly has to be changes in your backroom team to keep fresh voices, to keep challenging the players in different ways, to keep challenging yourself. And I think that unless you know, that can have an effect for so long, those changes in the background, but ultimately the top person has to change as well after a while, because you know, look, the players, regardless of the respect they have for you, they get to know you, they get to know your ways, they get to know what you're looking for, and there's nothing like shaking it up and a completely different set of demands being put on players to raise the bar. And I'm sure the Dublin players are in that situation at the moment with Desi Farrell. They're probably still trying to half figure him out, and that's a good thing for him.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how it plays.
One thing there, Mikey, though, that would always strike me about when you have a sort of a totemic figure that stays in a job for such a long time, like if you like Mickey Hart has done. If you look at, we'll say, Sean Boyle and even Mick O'Dwyer in Kerry, and we'll see what happens with when Brian Cody eventually does decide. A fallow period tends to follow a manager that has remained in situ for a really, really long time. Account like Meath took them, you could barely argue they may be still, they're only kind of getting back on their feet now. After 20 years of Sean Boyle, and I know Mikko managed right up until 1991. Eamon, was it? Mikko Dwyer was in charge up until maybe 1991.
89, I'd say, Rory, was his last season.
Okay, right. And like, obviously, Kerry kind of hit. And part of the reason for that, I suggest, is that when one manager is kind of in that main job for such a long time, it sort of blocks coaches from competing to get up to that level. And maybe the internal coaching structure does get stunted a little bit in terms of the competitiveness that you would have for people that would be pitching to take on the job after him. So, look, there's no right time. But I think the one thing Tyrone have going for them is they would look to have a fairly good batch of players at the minute, and the future's bright either way, I would imagine.
The future's also bright for your own county at the moment, Rory. We might as well, at least for another week. We might as well move on.
So bright, I was nearly going to wear shades.
Yeah. We have to discuss it, I'm afraid, Eamon. Kerry's defeat, obviously, an extra time to a dramatic late goal from Mark Keane. There seems to be two schools of thought, at least in the O'Shea family. The quietly fuming Tomás O'Shea. Just like, say, you could tell us some stories about Tomás O'Shea in the dressing room. My God, the man, after several hours in a TV studio, couldn't hide his rage the other night. It was fantastic. He kind of was very frustrated with the way the team set up, that they gave Cork maybe a bit too much respect. They didn't attack enough. In his column in Maliki's paper, Dara O'Shea kind of took an alternative stance, saying they just missed too many chances. There was goal chances. They left points behind them. Where did you see the game? Let Rory talk about where Cork won the game. You tell me where Kerry lost the game.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly it. I think, first of all, look, in Kerry, always straight away when you lose a game, the introspection starts and we start looking at ourselves straight away and blaming ourselves and so on, and what could we have done differently. And that's, look, that's probably a healthy thing in terms of trying to get it going for the following year. But I think possibly, certainly from with my Kerry hat on, maybe there hasn't been enough credit given to Cork for winning the game. I think their management and players, of course, who put the plan in place, they deserve huge credit. They got an awful lot right on the day. And as a result, you know, hung in there and won the game at the end. So they deserve credit. You know, I know all about Cork football. I was in college up in UCC. I played with a lot of very good players, some of whom went on to play for Cork, some who didn't. I played in the Cork.
By the way, you played on a team that beat my club in a county final. I'm still not after getting over it. 1999.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say that. I played in the county championships when I was up there. I love playing county championship football in Cork. We won it in 99. We were beaten in the final.
A great team, yeah.
And I saw the standard of club football in Cork up close and personal. So I know the talent that's in Cork and what they're capable of bringing to the table. And I think that's the thing about this win. Once they back it up, and asterisk has to be put in there, once they back it up Sunday week against Tipperary and win the Munster Championship, it can be a new dawn for them, because there's a lot of talent in the county. And as well as that, they have a good guy in charge who is putting that high performance culture in place. And I think the only way is up for them, but with the caveat that they need to back it up and win Sunday week. With regard to Kerry, look, in Kerry now, we are going to have, thankfully,
you're still in the official mourning period now, aren't you?
Chartered an official mourning period. And when it begins again, that the hope will spring eternal again and we'll start looking forward. But look, in management, and I know it better than anyone, there's a rationale for everything you do. And the Kerry management had a rationale for the way they played, for the way they set up, for the team they picked. Only they know the rationale. And when you win, if you win by a point or if you win by 10 points, everything is right. And it rarely is. The days you win, you get things wrong as well. And sometimes you just get a bit of luck and you get over the line. And when you lose, everything is wrong. And not everything is wrong either, but the fact that you didn't win, everything is wrong. So it's all about the result. We were on the wrong side of the result last Sunday, and we have to take it in the chin and move on. There's a lot of learning in it for everyone, from the management down, and certainly for a lot of the younger players, possibly, who thought that after last year, we just need to improve a small bit and we'll get there. And that's not the way it is. The bar goes up so far every year that to win the following year, you have to improve hugely. And it's hard to win All-Ireland medals. It's as simple as that.
Do you feel, as a former Kerry manager, that there is an onus on Kerry to play a certain way, or does winning absolve all sins? And, you know, as long as you win the match, nobody will be talking about how Kerry played if Mark Keane hadn't caught that ball and stuck it in the net.
Well, I think they would, Mikey and Kerry.
They would. Yeah, I think they probably would. Yeah.
Look, even when you win, there's a conversation, and particularly if you win, you know, without playing the Kerry way, let's call it, there's always question marks. Within the group, you don't care about that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter within the group, but there will be a conversation. It's as simple as that. But look, there is a culture in Kerry and a particular way of playing, but I think there's also a culture of trying to get the job done. And all the way back through history, Kerry have adapted, they've changed. We've had to, and everyone has to. And, you know, I think when you're in the hot seat, all you want is what's best for the group. You want to win, and you do it whatever way you can. And it's more or less as simple as that. And for everyone out in public that are having the chats and giving out and everything else, it doesn't matter. You don't take any notice of it, really.
Yeah, well, I think you have to have a thick skin. Malachy, for those of us not from Kerry, Jesus, it was great. It wasn't the greatest game of football ever, but you would forget the 90 minutes that went before with that finish. I was just something else. I think anybody who was watching it was kind of on cloud nine, even if they weren't from Cork for a couple of hours afterwards. It was championship football, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was there. I was very very privileged. And I do feel that these weekends when I get to go to games and people can't go to games. It feels weird to be going to an empty stadium, but when you're there for a game and everybody else has to watch it on TV, you do kind of feel the privilege of it. And when there's a last minute goal, like I was writing on the way back up, I took the train down and the train back, and I was writing on the way back up, like, we were without big time sport for so long. You nearly forget what it's like to be at a game with the last minute goal. You nearly forget like the sort of the rush, like Parky Cree was completely empty. And yet between the Cork sort of sub sideline team and let's be honest, their press pack, the roar nearly took the roof off the stadium, you know?
So you could probably hear Rory in the OB truck too.
Indeed.
I frightened a few people.
Yeah, indeed. Look, it was it was a mad way to finish a game. Like, I tend to now, of course, I'd be biased towards Dara's opinion because I do the column with him. But like, Dara made a really salient point. You know, whether or not Kerry should be playing that way is actually a separate, to a certain extent. I know all these things are interlinked. And you can't totally separate the yolk from the white of the egg, but they are separate things. Like, Kerry had 29 scoring chances, Cork had 19. Like, in any game, if you have three chances for the other team's two, you should win that game. Like, Sean O'Shea and David Clifford had 15 scoring chances between them and scored 6 points. Like, as Dara said, you could play, those two could be playing together for the next 10 years for Kerry. And not have a shooting day like that. And when you break it down, it's not like they were taking pot shots under huge pressure, or that they were living on scraps because of the defensive system. Like, some of those misses were, like, there was 2 14-meter frees, a 20-meter free, and a 45 for Sean O'Shea in those misses. There was David Clifford's wide after he didn't take the mark. There was, you know, Tony Brosnan had a wide that he'd score in his sleep. They were bad, bad misses. And that was the reason that they didn't put the game out of sight. I would suggest more so than the defensive system. I know the defensive system is the big talking point, but I think, like, we kind of laughed there, Mikey, when you said nobody would care had they got the result. Like, they absolutely would have. Like, there absolutely would have been plenty of chat. Had they sort of squeaked out with a 3, 4, or 5 point win, they would have all, the chat in Kerry, and Eamon can tell me if I'm wrong, but the chat in Kerry would have been, well, are we really going to play like that against Tipperary in the Munster final? You know, is that really what we're going to go through the rest of the championship with? So yes, look, that side of it is absolutely a talking point. But when you break the game down, had Kerry taken their chances, they would have won the game.
Yeah. Rory, we should give the Cork perspective here. Obviously, there is the elation of winning. But as Eamon said, the if now is you have to follow it up. And we've had examples already in this championship of after the Lord Mayor's show where teams can't back up a big performance with another. And Tipperary have shown that, you know, they're no slouches.
And it's absolutely, it's 100% a fair point to make, in particular in relation to the Cork footballers, because they have a long-standing history of getting it up for Kerry and then a flat performance soon after. But I don't think that will happen this time. I think actually Eamon would be in a very privileged position to give us a good indication as to why, because I think Ian O'Neill's addition has been a huge factor in behind the scenes, I think, from a psychological point of view, in terms of getting him in the right mindset. And I think he's a very, very smart fella. I mean, Eamon, he was with you when you won in 2014, if I'm not mistaken, so you'd have a fair idea in terms of what he could bring to a setup. I wouldn't necessarily agree with everything that Dara wrote in that piece, by the way, Malachy. I think he made mention of a point that he said Cork were living on scraps. I wouldn't agree with that at all. I actually watched the game back there on Tuesday night, and I actually think Cork got quite a decent chunk of possession, and I think they bossed the middle of the field for the most part for me, and I think that's a big problem for Kerry going down the line. Now, look, that's another day's story.
Sure, but the point he was making, Rory, though, was that they took 19 shots in nearly 100 front, minutes.
And 19 shots
in 100 minutes isn't a lot. I know the conditions and I know all of that, but I think that was the point he was making.
But I think they had a fair share of possession. I think their issue was, look, their penetration was a lot more difficult, and especially given the conditions. But I think the biggest thing for me, when I said, I actually got into a conversation about this on Twitter, like, the narrative that's been framed around the victory, I think has upset a few people, because, like, we've seen certain articles written and certain commentaries, even on television, right? You know, that this somehow benefits Dublin. No, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, if people want to take that sort of a view, fine. This benefits Cork. This is a massive injection of confidence into Cork football that was badly, badly needed. And getting Cork back competitive at the top table is a really positive thing for Gaelic football across the board. So for people to take that sort of view, I think, is a bit mealy-mouthed. And certainly there's a begrudging aspect to it.
What are you talking about?
People
don't care that this is a great thing for Cork. All they care about is the football championship and the fact that Dublin are going to stroll to it now. Nobody gives a shit it's important for you to care.
Dublin are going to stroll to the football championship. Eamon, I would like to ask you now, would you agree with that?
Would I agree that they'll show? I don't think it'll be as straightforward as that. I think any time you win an All-Ireland, there's going to be hiccups, particularly this year with a new management team and the fact that it has been so disrupted. They looked just at it again last Saturday night. I expect them to be the same this weekend. But I think the expectation, of course, is that they are going to win it, but I don't think they'll just stroll to it.
No, they won't. And there were a lot of different aspects, I think, to last Sunday. Like the Cork were extremely brave in pushing up on the Kerry kickout. They got their selection spot on. They were aggressive from the off and got very much physically engaged in the contest. Something that they've been accused of in the past for being gutless and spineless and not maybe up for the fight. Their conditioning is in top class shape, to be fair. So they've obviously been doing a fair bit of work in the off season, and they stuck in there when a lot of teams and a lot of Cork teams in the past would have folded. But no credit for any of that. And the entire narrative now is around Asher, isn't it a pity that we're not going to get Dublin and Kerry later on in the year?
Okay, put your soapbox away till next week when we preview Cork and Tipperary. This the dander's up down there. The dander's up. I like it.
Can I make one final point, Mikey?
Quickly.
I do actually believe this. I actually think playing behind closed doors is a massive help to this Cork football team, because I think sometimes there's an ignorance on the part of a lot of the modern day supporters about modern day football. And sometimes I felt watching Cork down through the years, when they would be slightly lateral and patient, a sort of a frustration would seep into the crowd that I sometimes felt would almost infect the performance, and it created a sort of a rush sense that they felt they almost were obliged to make a play. I think what they can actually do with nobody there is they can be a lot more patient and a lot more composed. And I think that's exactly what we saw in the lead up to the goal. I think if you actually had 15, 20,000 people there, they would have been baying and brooing and all sorts. I think actually playing behind closed doors, the Cork footballers are the one team that will probably benefit the most. And another thing, I think it will actually have a significant effect on Dublin's tilt at this six in a row.
Rory, does it not just suit the Cork footballers because they're used to playing in front of nobody?
100%. I said this last week on the podcast, if you were listening.
I wasn't.
That joke has been made a few times already. But no points for originality, but it's still funny, Malachy. Anyway, we better move on to this weekend before we run out of time. Eamon, before lockdown, Galway were the team being talked about as being the ones that were going to be the sticky wicket for Dublin this year. Two league defeats, one to the team they're playing on Sunday and one to Dublin in an odd sort of a game. And all of a sudden, you know, they get a walk over into a Connacht final. So their form line is very hard to read. Their confidence must be not where it was. For a first-year manager, it couldn't be a more challenging kind of final for Pádraig Joyce, I think, could it?
Yeah, it's a challenging situation for him, all right. But look, I think that the way Pádraig Joyce will be approaching it, and he's good people with him, John Dively, John Concannon, these guys, they'll have looked at it as an opportunity to get a block of work into the team. And by block of work, I mean a block of football work, embedding what they were at earlier on in the season. You know, I imagine he's watched back that Mayo game from the league a month ago a few times, and it would make fairly grim viewing for him. But it definitely is something to go on for the weekend of how not to do it. And particularly the first half, they actually won the second half. So the first half performance was what they'll be trying to make sure isn't repeated at the weekend. And look, looking at it at the moment, you have to say form and logic and the way Mayo are going and everything else, you'd be saying it has to be Mayo. But I just have a sneaky suspicion about Galway that they're going to do something at the weekend. They're just, they have a lot of tools. They have a lot of good players. Comer is a huge loss to them if he is out. And also, Ronan's a question mark about his fitness as well for the weekend. And he was very impressive pre-lockdown and has been very impressive for Cara Finn. So if he's out, I see him as a big loss. But I think it's going to be a very interesting game, and it'll be a huge game at the weekend. So challenging for Padraig Joyce, but he's also had a chance to kind of gather himself and gather the group because of the Sligo situation, and he's had the couple of weeks. So I expect to see a different Galway emerging on Sunday than we saw a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's a big thing, Malachy, isn't it? I know he can't hang it on one player, but Shane Walsh is terribly important, and if he's fit and firing and ready to start...
Apparently he is fit, Mikey. He is fit. Yeah.
That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I'd be interested, Mikey, if Declan Bonner or Kieran McGeaney were listening to you cry in a river for poor old Galway having to get a bye through to a Connacht final, compared to what they have to do in Ulster to even make the same stage of the competition. I'm not sure they'll shed too many tears for poor old Galway. I really fancy Galway in the weekend. I think it is set up perfectly for them. As Eamon says, they've had a month. They, apart from anything else, they got their scare. So it's not like they're going in thinking, here, sure, look, we only have to play one game here and we were brilliant before the lockdown, so we'd be brilliant now. They got brought back down to earth by Aidan O'Shea and Mayo, so they already have their scare. They have a month of completely unimpeded work now, ready for a Connacht final against a team they know better than anybody. So it's not like they're going in against any sort of unknown quantity or anything like that. I would fancy them on the weekend. And, you know, would they have liked a game? What would they have learned really from a game against Sligo that they probably would have won that they can't learn internally? If they have the right culture, and they look to have the right culture under Padraig Joyce and Dibley and Kincannon, I kind of fancy them to beat Mayo, to be honest.
Okay. And I just wanted to go back to you on Mayo. There's a lot of new championship. There's a lot of, I think they've made 8 debutants this championship already against Leitrim and Roscommon. And some of them have looked amazing. Oisín Mullen, Owen McLaughlin and Tommy Conway are kind of the ones that are standing out for people. There is a curiosity there that they're bringing in all these players, yet they have a need for Lee Keegan to play in the full back line, which I don't think anybody thinks is the ideal spot for arguably one of the 5 best halfbacks in the country. So it does seem that while they've got a lot of players coming in, they're perhaps not all in the positions where James Horan would most like to have them.
I think that's the exact point, Mikey. Yeah, and I think that's why Keegan is back there, that they're looking to develop a team where they have, you know, they have inside line players that they can trust to take care of the Mannions, the Paddy Smalls, the David Cliffords on the big day, and they see Lee Keegan in the full back line possibly as an answer to that. Even Oisín Mullen, who's playing great football in his debut season in the full back line, he looks like a half back and he plays a half back line for his club. So I think they're just trying to get players bedded in. Owen McLaughlin in the half-back line has been outstanding. I've been very impressed with him. And he's possibly a player that couldn't play in the full-back line. So I think that's why Keegan is in there. There is an element of robbing Peter to pay Paul. But I think James Horan is probably looking at the big picture, that when you're playing the top 2 or 3 teams, you need those inside backs that can go one-on-one with the best forwards and survive. And he knows Lee Keegan can do that. And it's kind of future-proofing the challenge for this year and possibly for the next couple of years as well.
Rory, it's probably nice for Mayo fans to not be constantly kind of wringing their hands and worrying about the load being placed on Aidan O'Shea and Killian O'Connor. There is still a load on them, but even from last year, they're central to the game plan, but they are not the game plan, so to speak. So there's definitely, you can see already that James Horan is developing a team here, and it's taken him 18 months or whatever. It's pretty impressive how it's coming on.
Really impressive manager. I think if you look back when the first edition under his stewardship back in 2010-2011 when he took over, he looks like he's got an incarnation number two now, and he's got he's getting the right blend. He's got a really nice dash of experience. He's got some very exciting young players, and playing in the Mayo way that he likes to play it, which is pretty much man to man. I think that's a big conundrum, actually, for Galway on Sunday. If they go straight up and play Mayo in straight up man-to-man, I think Mayo will love that. And I think it probably feeds into Mayo's hands. And with Mayo with two championship matches under their belt versus Galway's none, I could only see one winner. Now, the alternative is, does Park Joyce decide to maybe set up slightly more defensively? Now, that would probably kill him to have to do that. But can he trust his full back line? Can he trust that half back line to, in a 1v1 situation? Can he trust them? I'm not entirely sure. I think he's going to. I think it's a big selection dilemma actually for Galway and Park Joyce and how he sets the team up. But I fancy Mayo big time.
Okay, so two for Galway, one for Mayo. That's interesting. We are almost out of time. Michael Dignan is waiting in the waiting room. So, Malachy, Donegal v Armagh, first time they're playing each other in championship in 5 years, which I found quite interesting. And Donegal, I think we know a lot about. Armagh, when we discuss them here, we kind of say, a bit flaky in defence, very good in attack, good for 15 minutes, bad for 15 minutes, which are all kind of clichés at this stage. But looking at their last match, there was a lot to be kind of excited about, and they seem to have a guy called Ryan Kennedy, a cornerback who can keep Shane McGuigan scoreless for 75 minutes from play. So he must be something we're talking about, as well as the O'Neills and the Grugans, etc., in attack.
They have in common for a couple of years, and it's good to see. It was really good. It has been good to see a team coming through Ulster that is trying to play something other than dear old Ulster football. Now, they will get bogged down in it, of course, because, that's the way these games tend to go. But I wrote a preview at the start of the year going, they would have been this was the wrong year for there to be no qualifiers for Armagh, because I sense, Donegal are very good, probably. Like, they're so experienced, and their young guys seem to have no fear, like Oisin Gallen and the like of that. Have no particular fear and kind of like the stage. So Donegal are very good, but this would have been a year for Armagh to maybe lose this game and then get through the qualifiers and play in the Super 8s and progress that way. I think they'll make a real game of it on Sunday. Is it Sunday or Saturday? I'm not sure which. But they'll make a real game of it. And they will. I don't think they will lose by much. I think Donegal will win it. But I really like that Armagh team, because McGeaney started getting them playing what you would call actual football, proper football, like about 4 years ago. And you know, the instinct of all Ulster teams and all Ulster players is genuine, because that is what that championship is. Every game does devolve into, if one team has 14 men back, well, you can't play with six forwards and six backs. You have to sort of mirror them. You have to set up that way. And but Armagh have tried to play more football than other Ulster teams. And I'd love to see them come through it. It's a huge chance for them. I think Donegal are better than them and can see a path and can see a chance for a big year for themselves. So I think Donegal will sort of take care of business. But Armagh are decent. They're a really decent side.
Okay, not to rush in as we are running out of time. Would you agree that Donegal will have too much for Armagh, which would seem like the logical answer? And also, Cavan v Down. I watched the Cavan Antrim game last week. Cavan made awful hard work of it, even though Antrim were game and left a few scores behind them. Cavan have, you know, and Grove McKiernan, one of probably top 10 footballers in the country, and should have done better. They have points coming from defence. Didn't see Down, but from what I hear, very pacey. They've got scores from everywhere as well. So this traditional Ulster football match, you know, there are a lot of scores out there, and it could be interesting. How do you see the two of them going?
Both games are hard to call, Mikey. Look, I agree with a lot of what Malachy said, but I give Armagh a massive chance at the weekend. I still think Donegal are developing. They are coming. They have a bit more experience under their belt at that level, particularly the Super 8s last year. But I just like the look of Armagh. I think they have a lot of the tools with the O'Neills. They're kicking the ball. They have a good keeper. They've got better backs now. They still have the likes of Jamie Clark for a bit of magic. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Armagh won at the weekend. Cavan and Down, I think, is a very hard game to call. Like you said, the likes of the Galligans are playing well in goals, and the Galligan out the field, you've McKernan. They were flat against Antrim, which wasn't a huge surprise after the big win the previous weekend against Monaghan. So I haven't seen much of Down either, but again, they have good players with, you know, the likes of Caelan Mooney, Don O'Hare, Barry O'Hagan, I think, was very good for them last weekend. So wouldn't be surprised if it was a kind of an extra time game, and you know that it was very tight. Not sure in that one, but they'll be good games anyway, I think, both of them.
And
just one very simple point there, Mikey, and very quick one. I do think as well the Donegal Armagh game, the fact that it's in Breffni, I think, is a major plus. It's a brand new pitch. It's a fabulous ground, firstly, but the pitch is brand new, and I think conditions. And the conditions of the pitches is actually a big factor in this year's championship. And I think it should make for a good game. It might suit Armagh, actually, to a certain extent. So,
okay. And just before we go, unless somebody has got to take their brain medicine this morning, I think we're going for Dublin over Laois. But then, in a word, Malachy and Eamon first. Meath v Kildare. Meath got 7 goals the last day. Kildare, managed by a man you know very well, aren't going to concede 7 goals. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, again, I think a very tight game. Meath have been impressive since lockdown as well. They were good tonight in Parnell Park against Dublin. Played well against Monaghan above in Clonus. Huge win, obviously, last weekend. They have a lot of good players. You know, you'd be leaning towards Meath, but obviously with Jack involved with Kildare, they have a lot of good players as well. The old reliables, the Flynns and Feely and so on, but some of the newer young lads that have come through this year have done very well. Derek Irwin, I think, in particular, had a great game last weekend. So I give Kildare a great shout, but you know, the way Meath are going at the moment, Kildare need to be on top of their game to beat them.
Malachy, in a word?
Yeah, Meath, I think they kind of can't not win it. Like, I think the year is a kind of a disaster for me that they don't win it. Like,
that was their first win in 16 months.
Yeah, but like, but they deserved other wins. Like, they kind of should have beaten Monaghan and Clonus. They kind of blitzed Galway in Navan before the lockdown until half time. Yeah, they were fantastic in that game and kind of gave it away. They have clearly improved by every metric except results, which is, of course, no way to, you know, that's not a good way to finish out the year. But if they beat Kildare, if they get to a Leinster final, then the year is about par, I'd say. So I think their absolute need will get them through it.
Okay. Eamon, we will bid you adieu. If Armagh do manage to beat Donegal, I think we'll have to have you back on next week to crow, because there's not too many people making that prediction. So anyway, enjoy the matches at the weekend, and we'll talk to you again.
He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses!
Welcome back. We've been joined by Michael Deignan. How are you going on, Michael?
Good, Mikey. Can't complain.
Good stuff. Listen, I don't think we were talking the football championship. There's 12 teams left and we'll be down to 7 after this weekend. The hurling championship, I don't think we've ever had a weekend like this where all the remaining teams are playing. 2 will be gone at the end of the weekend and we'll know our final 6. So don't think we can make the case that the provincial champions are that much more important than the other matches, really. So we'll go in chronological order, which conveniently means we start with Wexford v Clare, which is what I want to talk about. Michael, I have to mention it, the Davy v Lowen thing, it's a bit of a media construct in that it's just perfect. You've got the little loudmouth goalkeeper who used to be protected by the big silent, you know, fullback, and they were best buddies, and now they're not anymore, and only one of them ever talks about it, and even he doesn't talk as much as he usually does. It's just the kind of perfect newspaper podcast story, but it does add a little bit of an edge to the match, I suppose, which probably doesn't need any edge.
It does, Mikey. I think that I've talked about this before and I've written about it. I think it's in a way it's quite sad. You know, we're talking about an amateur sport. We're talking about a Clare team that made the breakthrough and won All-Irelands after all those years. And you're talking about two of the most pivotal members of that. You know, I think Davy, Lohan, Dalo, Lucknan, maybe Shawnee Mack, Jamesy, they're the five or six pivotal people. Ollie Baker, obviously, if you were on him for an hour, he'd be fairly pivotal as well. And and Brian Lohan, not the quietest on the field, verbally or any other way, but a great play, like, look, just fantastic. And Davy is one of those people. I suppose we've all had a fall out with him at some stage. But to me, as far as I'm concerned, it's only in sport. It's only differences of opinion. And that's what he does. He elicits that sort of response. But I think this thing's a little bit deeper when you take teammates that. I played in the same era. We were this time last year. We had our 25 years. We went to Portugal on holidays. We got together. We wouldn't be meeting up off the field or anything like that as a rule. An odd one of us would be friendly, but for us all to get together and to have that bond after all those years, you know, it's not a cliche. It was unbelievable the way we just got back together and just it was so natural. And Clare were planning something similar this year, and you know, it wasn't going to probably happen that smoothly because of the relationship that has disintegrated with Brian Owen and Davey, and I think maybe some other members of the panel as well over things. And Davey takes everything very personally about people in the media. Dalo said things and other lads said things. And then they clashed in third level, you know, between LFC and UL, and then Davey's dad being involved in Clare. So like it's not a simple environment, and I think it's sad. And I thought in the league match this year, maybe, you know, they might shake hands and be done with it, but I don't think it happened. So it might be a little bit of a joke in the media and that, but I would actually think it's a lot more serious than that. I think it's a sad thing to see two such great players, such pivotal members, the fullback and the goalie, as you mentioned, that really were outrageous players in their own way, and did so much. They really probably typified the defiance of that Clare team more than anybody. I think it's a bit childish at this stage. I think they should. You know, I think both, particularly Lohan's a very straightforward. I think any that know him, he's a fairly straightforward man. And I would have thought, but it must be deeper than that. And it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is. To be no shaking hands anyway, so
no,
that might be a help.
Malachy, do you think it could have an impact? Because I think he's probably toned down a little bit from the days when he was Clare manager and he was screaming at his former Waterford players, asking them how many All Ireland medals they had. I remember that one. That was a magical moment. There is a little bit of theatre when it comes to Davy, and I don't know what role it has in any sport, really, the managers and what they do on the sideline. But to those of us on the outside, we like to think maybe it has a bit of an impact. But I don't know. It just seems to add a strange dynamic to this game for me, which I'm finding hard to get over.
I don't think it's as big a deal for this particular game as it might have been earlier in the year for the league game, because I think by now they have bigger things on their mind. The league game back in whenever it was in February, you know, was back in the normal world. Now they're both over two teams that are in big danger of their year ending this weekend, you know, and two teams that have not played well in this championship so far. So I think that is more in their... I'd say their worries are more concentrated on that than each other. The theatre aspect of it as well. I was at the Galway-Wexford game a couple of weeks ago, and I've never seen Davy as quiet on a sideline in my life. Now, I don't know if it's the empty stadium. I don't know if it is just that it was a reflection of how flat his team were on the night. But, like, there was very little roaring and screaming, the usual conniption fits that you see from him on the sideline. So that element of theatre might be damped down as well. But I think far bigger looming in their minds, Mikey, is the fact that they are both sending a team into a championship match, and all their plans and all their thoughts for what they were going to do in the championship have not been borne out. You know, Clare were not, you know, Tony Kelly apart, Clare were not good on their first day out. And, you know, had to battle through last week. And Wexford were abysmal, you know. After the first water break in the Galway match, and I watched it, I actually watched a lot of it back this morning for a piece I'm doing for the weekend, you know, they were so unrecognizable from the Wexford team that won Leinster last year and that were sort of 15, 20 minutes away from an All-Ireland final. That team did not turn up against Galway, and I would say Davy has spent far more brain power in the last 2 weeks on sorting that out than thinking about Brian Lohan and vice versa.
Yeah. Michael, I've said this for years as a, you know, very enthusiastic Wexford fan. When Davy's Wexford click, they are mesmeric. It's just like the patterns, the rhythm of it. It's amazing. The thing is, when it's off, when the timing is off, when things aren't clicking, they actually look like they've only picked up a hurl for the first time, because the margin of error is so small with the style of play that when it's not right, and it wasn't just the timing, it wasn't just the passing, like they weren't in defence, they weren't on it either, they just seemed flat. But and Davy's other teams are like this as well. When they have an off day, it's kind of magnified because of the margins, I believe. And they looked as bad as they've ever looked.
Yeah, and I think another thing about Wexford, and Maliki touched on it there, I think of any team to play, you know, the crowd is so important to them, the massive support that they bring. And and Davy feeds off that. And that's, I think, Maliki is the reason he was so quiet. And I think that's obviously would be a bigger factor on the weekend if you had a big Clare crowd who were also very passionate. I think that would really, you'd see sparks. What I found interesting about the way they played, they were obviously very flat and the margin of error, but it wasn't even that. It was the one-dimensional side. Davy talks about the different amount of different ways of playing that they have. I didn't see that in action. It was slow and cumbersome. But look, sometimes you can read too much into what's gone before. You know, you see it so often that the next day is completely different. And I couldn't see Wexford coming out of this day like that again. Being as poor, no, I couldn't. And now there is a question mark. I know a few question marks over injuries and things like that, but you couldn't see them as poor. But it was a very, very disappointing. Galway played very well. Their new players settled in. I think Galway needed that. So they were good, but Wexford were very, very bad. But we've seen this before. And suppose the thing is now it's we're going to see hopefully in the next couple of weeks, because I have to say a lot of the hurling matches very dead. Because I think the lack of the crowd, you really feed into it. I know football is the same, but the football has been knockout more or less for the last couple of weekends. It has been. So I'm thinking we're going to see a return to maybe more intensity, and Wexford certainly feed off that. They need that drive and intensity to see the best of them. So I expect them to bounce back pretty much to a much higher level this weekend.
Okay, we'll maybe leave our predictions till the end so we can cover everything here, because time is of the essence.
Mikey, one small factor from a Clare perspective is if they getting David McInerney off that red card. If they can't get that red card quashed, I think their goose is cooked.
Well, if Rory O'Connor and Lee Chin don't pass fitness tests, Wexford's goose could be cooked too. So we'll wait and see. Maliki, Tipperary v Cork in a round two qualifier and not a Munster final. Not where either team would want to be. Cork. The logic here is Cork have got some momentum. They got a win under their belt. They beat a Dublin team who gave them nothing easy. Whereas Tipperary coming off the back of. For all Ireland champions, what Tip got from Limerick that day was something of a hurling lesson. But in Liam Sheedy, I guess they have a man who can wipe the slate clean pretty quick.
Yeah, well, you say a hurling lesson. With about 15 minutes to go and the win behind them, they were still only 5 points down, you know, against the team that had played the previous week. Like, Tipperary, that was Tipperary's first match for 8 months, and they were playing against the All-Ireland favourites, who had a game under their belt, and not only a game under their belt, but a game that everybody gave out was too tippy-tappy under their belt. So they were coming out the following week, hell for leather, playing against Tipperary side in a bleeding hurricane. I don't know, Tip, obviously, you don't want to lose any game, but I think they had plenty to take out of that game. And I would fully expect them to beat Cork now. Cork sort of turned it on last week against Dublin to a certain extent. They definitely, what you saw there was the benefit of having had a game and having had a bad game and rousting yourself and a bit of defiance out of it. And so they were a team transformed a bit. They were more physical. They were more intense. There was more intensity about it. But I expect that from Tipperary here. And I expect them to have gone up a level from that Limerick game to have got their warning, to have got that bit of experience under them. And I think they're a better side than Cork by a good sort of 5 or 6 points, I would have thought.
It was a good weekend for Cork, Rory. Going to mark the 30th anniversary of the double with another double. Well, was a thought maybe for a few seconds, but it's hard to disagree with Malachy's logic there that, Tip lost a game, but they're still the All-Ireland champions, and they could probably, on a good day, you could arguably say they could put out 2 15s that could give most teams in the country, including Cork, a run for their money. But Cork, Kingston, he had a lot to be happy about. Mainly it was a reaction, but, Alan and Owen Cadigan aren't going to be there, and Dara Fitzgibbon isn't going to be there. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, massive. Like, especially Dara Fitzgibbon. I think he's a huge loss. Anybody that watched any of the Fitzgibbon Cup earlier on in the season there, and I saw a lot of it, and I was at the final as well, which was against Carlow IT. It was played inside in DCU. And himself and Paddy O'Loughlin basically ran the show. the Limerick wing, who's actually burst onto the Limerick team now as well. I think he's maybe first choice Limerick wing back, savage player as well. But Dara Fitzgibbon, huge loss. And I think, funnily enough, and I know, again, I don't want to keep sounding like I'm harping on about this, but I do think venues, pitches and conditions are hugely important, and actually more important in hurling than probably in football. And the fact that the game is in Limerick, I think, is... Cork should have just said, look, we'll go up to Thurles to play, I know George Fitzgibbon was in the paper, but I was actually saying this, I was in a text conversation with a friend of mine beforehand. I said, the last place Cork should be going to play them is below to Limerick, because it's a heavy pitch. And I think if you were looking to try and get at Tipperary, and the one area that maybe they might have a suspect weakness is they might be lacking a little bit of legs around their half-back line, where Cork would probably have a bit of pace that maybe they could run them. But I just think, look, if it's going to get into a sort of a hand-to-hand thing, the weather forecast is not great again, and it's going to become a battle. Cork don't win too many of them, Plus, Tipperary fast, you couldn't potentially see the defending All-Ireland champions go out so meekly. It would be unthinkable under the stewardship of someone like Liam Sheedy. So it's only one winner, unfortunately, for me on Saturday.
Michael, would you say whether it's a hand-to-hand combat or whether it's a game of hurling, that Tipperary should win either game, really, given what they have, on the pitch, and also quite importantly, given the conditions and given like the matches that we're seeing on the bench as well, they have 20, 25 players there that are just, it's hard to pick the first 15 sometimes.
It is, but I think their challenge again is getting that balance right. Last year they really went with Liam Sheedy, came back in and he was criticised for showing so much loyalty to the older players. The lads with supposedly the mileage which they had, the Brendan Maher, Paddy Maher, Bonner, and it was Noel McGrath, there was question marks over the mileage, not so much their age, but he stuck with them and brought in the young lads, and eventually they got it right, so right, like springing the 4 or 5 subs to finish games. We saw it against Wexford, we saw it everywhere in the final, and he started a couple of them the last day. Mark Yeo started, what do you call him in the corner as well? Jake Morris. But, he didn't really change up the half back line, and Paddy had carried an injury into the game. I think he'd missed a number of weeks training with a knee injury. So I think that's really the biggest thing for Tipperary going into the Cork match is to see, what is our starting team? Do we need another one or two of those under 21s in the starting team and trying to get that blend right? And I'd agree with Maliki. I thought in the circumstances, Tip played reasonably well. I know the John McGrath goal was a thrown ball by Noel, a lovely throw. Actually, but classic, but
fouls in a millisecond
that nobody saw it happened that quick. So I do think Tip, but again, Cork, Cork have, and Rory is frustrated, everyone is frustrated with Cork. They did get a fair shooing and kicking from their own people, like after the Waterford game, and Tip got it as well. So it's how you react to that. And Cork reacted reasonably well last week, in fairness, but this is a big step up. And I think that's, as I say with Tip, I think is to get back. And we saw them getting hammered by Limerick last year, and they recovered, and they can do this. And I wouldn't be writing them off. And I think that article that Eamon Sweeney wrote in the Independent last Sunday, sometimes you need that, and you need that sort of motive. You say you don't need it, but you do. It does. Players do react to that sort of thing, saying that they got a soft all earned and were handed an all earned last year. That's so I'd expect a big come back from Tip.
Yeah, they don't need help bearing a grudge, or looking for enemies from outside the county walls. Okay, we'll breeze on. Next up then, Saturday evening, is the Leinster final between Galway and Kilkenny. Maliki, to me, the Galway were so impressive against Wexford, who were, in Davy's own words, absolutely terrible, whereas Kilkenny played well for 35 minutes. Who's run on predictions on this podcast since the championship restarted, is absolutely terrible as well, worse than Wexford's performance. I can't see Galway losing this game with if Concannon and Whelan and the likes play as well as they did against Wexford. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm too long doing this to dismiss Kilkenny at any stage, really. I've been on plenty of these shows on radio, TV, podcasts, and I remember doing one with Milan one year about Dublin were playing Kilkenny down in Port Leash, and going, I was very bullish. Yeah, Dublin, this is Dublin's time. They're going to absolutely do them. And they got
over after 10 minutes. Away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've learned my lesson there. Galway were very impressive. Apart from, I was saying earlier, I was watching it back for a piece I'm doing on Saturday. And God, they were tactically really, really on it against Wexford. Like Conor Whelan scored 4 points from play, and him and Brian Concannon, I think, got 1-8 between them.
It is, yeah.
But, absolutely, of course, that's their biggest contribution to the night. But what was kind of lost was, they were the front line of what stopped Wexford's running game. Like, they were the tacklers that were stopping Liam Ryan coming out, stopping, breaking tackles in around that sort of middle ground. And it's funny, I was watching it back, and Michael was doing, it was Michael's commentary over it. And I was watching, the view I was watching was from behind the goal, behind the Hill 16 goal. And Michael kept saying, Wexford need to change this up here. They need to find a different way of playing. They need to play this longer. And you were watching from behind the goal, you were going, oh my God, he is so right. Because what Wexford kept doing was running out and running out, and they kept running into Conor Whelan and Brian Concannon and Jason Flynn and Joe Canning. And that was where, the basis of Galway's win came from. And that was clearly a tactical plan from the Galway management. Okay, this is how Wexford played. This is how we're going to stop them. Every ball that they played forward, be it from Porrick Mannion or Sean Loftus or Connor Cooney or whoever, was down the flanks, down the wings to take out the Wexford sweeper. The Wexford sweeper wasn't in the game, and the Wexford running game wasn't in the game. So it was a kind of a tactical masterclass. So that to me was very, really, very impressive, and really sort of beyond, yes, the brilliant play from Whelan was awesome. He really was. And Concannon was seriously good as well. Their scoring was very, very good. But for the long sweep of the championship, the fact that they had a really bespoke tactical plan and that it worked, like, there's nothing better for players than a new manager coming in with a tactical plan and it working to a T. Like, you're going into training the next week going, right, what have you got for us now? What are we doing this time? What are we doing for the next game? So that I find that really impressive, and that's why I'd go with them here, because I think they will kind of possibly outthink Kilkenny, but I'd be hit by lightning for saying that.
Michael, Brian Cody's too long in the game at this stage as well to have bespoke tactics. I don't think he does anybody that compliment, but like, geez, they were 3-13 to 7 points up at halftime. Like, and the tactic is give TJ Reid the ball, and if he wants to put it over to Barry Will, and if he wants to give it to Colin Fennelly, there's a good chance of a goal. It's a fine tactic that's been working for two teams, Ballyhale and Kilkenny, for a few years. But Jesus, that second half was just, it would make you ask a lot of questions.
It was hard to believe. It was hard to believe how bad they were in the second half. You know, and just couldn't believe it. I was just marveling at TJ Reid, in the first half. And I wrote a piece last Sunday where I'm sort of saying, have we seen? I don't think I've seen a better forward. I haven't seen a better forward. In my opinion, I'm including Henry and DJ, but that's all about debate. I was talking about him with Christy Ring, Rory. You wouldn't like to see that, but putting him up on that pedestal. But yeah,
started again. We had enough of it in the football podcast.
I saw more TJ, but look at, see, it doesn't. I said it about the earlier matches. It doesn't really matter what Kilkenny did in the second half or didn't do. They will do what they do, right? They will turn up. They will, from the first ball, they will fight for everything. They will, you know, they will give it everything. And some days, and one team that has maybe made them look average over the last number of years is Galway, more, you know, on a number of occasions. And the big thing that Galway, and it's a factor with Limerick and Galway particularly, is the actual physical size of them. They are I was down on the sideline before the match again last week. I was down several times over the years. But they are massive, right? And even the small lads, right? Conor Whelan is small in height. Relatively small. He's not that small.
No. He's as wide as he is.
He's about 6 foot. He's about 6'2" is still, like, he's, you know.
Well, he's over 6 foot, but he looks small compared to some of the rest of, like, these lads are absolute savages now. And that's right throughout your team. And like, that has a big bearing, because if you're getting stopped, like Maliki is talking about, and you're getting tackled and you're getting harried and you're getting hit, that takes it out of you when that's your game plan. You're saying, Jesus, where am I going to start here when I get this sharp puck out? And who am I going to go past? And how am I going
Who picks up TJ, Michael? Who picks up TJ? Who do you think? Is it Fintan Burke, maybe? No?
Yeah, I'd say that's a good call. You know, he's very athletic. He's very strong. Look, I don't know if it's TJ is one thing, but TJ can do a lot of harm to you as well, even when he's, like, you know, maybe off the ball. But, like, looking at Kilkenny, as I said, they looked very good when they were good, but there has to be a question mark after last year's All-Ireland final. There has to be a question mark over just the overall quality of the team. I think TJ Reid has kept them very competitive for the last couple of years. Colin Fennelly, like, somebody made the point, I was reading it recently, that it's unusual at that stage of their lives, the last number of years, but they seem to have got better over the last, both of them, over the last 3 or 4 years. And because I saw Colin Fennelly in Turles a few years ago, I think he was about 17. He'd come back from the Lebanon, and I saw him, and I said, this is quite sad that this lad is finished. His legs are gone, and you know, really, he should retire. And next thing, he goes, and he's, the last 2 years, particularly at club level, but also at county level, he has just, you know, and he only does enough usually, but you'd expect him to kick on. So, look, the one thing about Galway, from a negative point of view, is, you know, Conor Cooney's form for the last couple of years, he's obviously still playing very well at club level, and he's on, but at county level, he had two or three very easy chances. And I was saying, if he pops one or two of them over the bar, his confidence just looks to be very low. Jason Flynn from the start, not really doing. Niall Burke is still coming in. Concannon has got his start and hit a super game. But there's still, to me, in their forward line, a little bit of maybe a little bit brittle confidence-wise with a couple of those lads. And that could come back to haunt him in a tight battle. And, like, the weather, as you say, Rory, is going to be bad and all that. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I expect Galway to win it. I think, you know, they were impressive, and they were very impressive. And I think what Maliki says about Shane O'Neill, I think, is a point very well made, because you say, we were saying about the new managers coming in, you know, they didn't have that time with their players over the lockdown, you know, the Liam Cahills and the Shane O'Neills and these lads. But they got off to good starts, which, from a confidence point of view, is massive for those. So Galway should win it, but I'm in Maliki's camp. I'm 20 years at this now, on co-coms and commentary. And the day you think that they're gone is they come back and bite you.
Yeah, so, it's called Colin Fennelly syndrome.
Don't look to have it. Yeah,
yeah. You think they're gone and they're not. Speaking of Liam Cahill, then we'll move on to the Munster final. Rory, against Cork, Waterford had time, they had space, they had options. You know, Tadhg Na Bhfirca was regal because he was, as Brendan explained it to us last week, he looked up and he had time to look up and he looked down the field and he just saw white jerseys everywhere in space where he wanted them. That's patently not going to be the case this Sunday. Everywhere there's a white jersey, there's going to be at least one green jersey, and this is going to be proper test for Waterford.
I'd expect them to be competitive, though. I think it will be a competitive game. I don't necessarily see Limerick completely blowing them out of the water. Liam Cahill, I find, is an extremely impressive figure. I think there's a steeliness about their display. The last day, that was probably the most impressive aspect for we'll say, a neutral observer. And while Tadhg Na Bhfirca ran the show, I would still expect him to get on a lot of ball because Limerick actually don't commit that many people. Like, it's a lot of the time with Limerick, it's Aaron Galan on his own inside the full forward line. Graham Mulcahy tends to buzz around the place, as does Casey. Like, so I'd imagine Tadhg Na Bhfirca will still get on a lot of ball. The big problem this time for Tadhg Na Bhfirca is when he looks for distribution. You're running into Grand Central Station, because like that's where Limerick are going to come and hunt you down. And the single biggest thing, and I've seen this now, I've been keeping a close eye, you know, Johnny Bradley, who works with us, Michael, and his stuff is really good. Like he's collating kind of stats reports, Mikey. I'll send a couple of Monty, actually. They're very good, even from an online perspective. You get a bit of value out of them. And one repetitive and very standout-ish stat that seems to come up again and again and again in all of the reports on all of the Limerick games is how many scores they get from turning the ball over. And it's about 80% of their scores. So even if they don't have possession, that's almost like a challenge to them. And I think that's probably a sort of a frenzy that I'm not entirely sure Waterford will have experienced really just yet. I know they got a chastening experience in the Gaelic rounds last year in the round robin stages, but I think at that point, I'd say the towel had probably been thrown in. This time, they'll be very much more up for the fight, but I just think this Limerick team are just too far ahead in their development to not win on Sunday. But I do expect Waterford to give them a game and potentially have a say in this championship yet.
Yeah, it felt like about a decade, Michael, or probably longer, we were talking about the importance of a half-back line, but it was Galway in 2017, obviously, the Tipperary half-back line that we still talk about, and obviously the great Kilkenny half-back line that won four All-Irelands. It now seems in the last year or two that when it comes to talking about arguably the most informed team over two or three years, we're talking about their half-forward line, whether it's Gerald Hegarty and Tom Morrissey, and then one of Keane Lynch or sometime bizarrely wing back Kyle Hayes. Would you go along with saying that the Limerick half forward line is their most important line, and what is it about them that just makes them so influential?
I think it is, and I think just on that Keane Lynch one, like the last day we're talking about, that was a master stroke as well. It was a simple one, but Tipperary would have taught an awful lot about Keane Lynch in the middle of the field and put Alan Flynn there, and straight away you go out in the first minute, he's not there. And Kyle Hayes is back wing back, which I wouldn't be that surprised with. Players like that can play anywhere. You know, he's a ferocious athlete and can get up and down the field. And the way Limerick play, and they're all attacking it, you know, from there. But, you know, I thought Lynch, we'll talk about Morrissey and Hegarty in a minute because they're there. But Lynch, the last day, had over 20 possessions. And it's just the speed that he can get the ball into his hand and distributed is way ahead of anybody else. He's just his skill level, and he's, but again, it's power as well and physique, able to do that and get in there and win that ball. But the speed he picks the ball and distributes it, and the hand pass, and players know what's coming. It's off the shoulder all the time, because it doesn't matter if a lad wins, collects those ball, and he doesn't pass it when he's supposed to pass it. He has the intelligence, or he has the vision to see it. It doesn't matter how many runners you have or where they're going, because they look bad actually if they'll be out of position. But it's a link of all that. And what Hegarty and Morrissey do just is to have a free rein, and they have the hurling intelligence and the hurling brain. There's no point going from right half forward to left half forward unless you're doing something over there. And when invariably when Hegarty is over there, he's putting the ball over the bar, or Morrissey is, they're getting into position to finish all the time. They're working back. It's not a new phenomenon what they're doing. It's just that they do it better, and the team know why that they're there, so they pick them out. So I know many times that wing forward over the years, as the hurler myself, you move off your man 20 yards and the fella, the other side, pucks the ball over your head back to your man. And who's on that lad? Who's on that lad? But that doesn't happen with them, right? So because they're so good and they understand, and the team understands what they're doing, and it's not just one, it's a combination of all the players. So Declan Hannan is vital in the setup. He wins the ball. It's all a 20-yard pass off the hurl by him. Will O'Donoghue is running and laying it off. He knows what he can do. He's very athletic. He's picking off a couple of points now as well. I think he's a player that has developed a lot this year. So they are hugely important, but it wouldn't work without all the other bits and pieces. And Rory mentioned Peter Casey and Mulcahy. Like, their work rate and their tackling is unbelievable. And Maliki talked about the Galway lads, Whelan and Concannon. But these lads are the template for that. The amount of times that they hook and block and turn over ball from there. So, you know, Gillan is probably the only one that looks a bit lazy, but he doesn't, because he's keeping his energy for what he has to do. So it's like he stands at 14. Lad, you can tackle, you can do this. My job is then when we go short, long, that I'm moving and he knows it's coming. And he then has that burst then to get out to the ball and win that. So it's nearly like he has a different role than the rest of the forwards. Mm. And that's understood as part of the team plan, because he's not running around 70, 80 yards chasing lads. He's waiting and has that, and to take his freeze and to win the ball. And then he has the outlet in the air,
right,
which makes that sweeper or that tie to Burka easier to take out of the game.
That's pretty
switch a high ball in as well. So look, but funny enough, I still go along with Rory Liam Cahill, and I'll be brief on this. He has a steal. Go back to the 21 I learned 2 years ago when Cork were, you remember that dream Cork team? And they bet them in an Ireland final. They had no right to beat them. They were hammered in a Munster final. And they came back and beat them. They won it last year with a far better team. But then they played the Champagne Hurling. But when he had to win it hard, they won it hard. And now he's gone. And he made the hard calls. Noel Connors is one of the players of the decade, in my view, of the last 10, 12 years. And he just, like, I'm sure Noel Connors is a very impressive guy as well and everything. That Liam went to him and said, Noel, your time is up. And he was gone. And what would be most people's instinct going into a county is say, I'll keep everybody for the first year, keep everybody happy, and then I'll weed them out. But he went in and got rid of him and Marishan and a few others, and he brought in these young players, and I think they'll hit the ground. And getting that win psychologically is big for them. So I expect them to be full of running and very athletic, because they are, but a bit behind where Limerick, if this All-Ireland is in Limerick hands. If they play like they're capable of playing all the time, but that's hard to do every single day, especially as favourites every day. So it's not a foregone conclusion, but they should win again on Sunday.
Okay, we are bang out of time, so I'll go first. I will say Wexford, Tipperary, Galway, and Limerick. Maliki?
I can't even remember the games now. Wexford, who are Wexford playing? Yeah, Wexford, Tipperary, Galway, Limerick. Yeah, sorry, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Rory, did you agree?
You got them right.
No, I wouldn't differ from that, no.
Michael?
I go for the Leinster team in the Leinster final. Outside of that, I go the same.
You've been burned too many times, Michael, by the Cats, so yeah. You're not taking it.
Yeah. And very, very last...
I'm going for a shock.
A very last word.
Kelly shock.
Michael, the final word to you. Down versus Offaly in Christy Ring semi-final this weekend. That's just a massive game, isn't it?
It is, Mikey. Look, first of all, it's fantastic the year has gone ahead. Look, we're down now to provincial finals with the drama last week in the football. It's just great that it went ahead, and I was very strong on that it did go ahead. And this is a big one. Obviously, if whoever wins this match is in the final, so that means they go up to the Joe McDonagh. And look, we're rebuilding an awfully. We have an awful long way to go back. But this is a massive game for Offaly Hurling. And we were up there last Saturday. I was up there myself. We played Derry. So the logistics are difficult. You're driving up, stopping in a garage, trying to get a bit of grub. And, you know, it's the same for every team now traveling around the country. So, you know, an outdoor and trying to, you know, that brings us challenges trying to get everything organized. But that dry run, I think, will be helpful to us. But we're going into down to play down. and obviously very respectful of it, but just will hopefully get out of there on Saturday evening, get home in time for the Leinster final, and hopefully it'll be a win for Offaly, and look forward to the final in which is in Croke Park the week after. So it'll be a that would be a first for a lot of the Offaly players as well to play a final in Croke Park. So let's you know, looking forward to it, and hopefully we'll get there.
Okay, we are bang out of time. You know yourselves, you follow matches on RTÉ Radio. You can follow them on RTÉ TV, a fair few of them, and you can follow them all on RTÉ Online. So I will say thank you to Malachy and to Rory and to Michael and to Eamon earlier. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it, it's over the bar! Oh, holy Moses!